Insightful podcasts by informative hosts. Insights into Things, a podcast network.
Welcome to Insights into Entertainment, a podcast series taking a deeper look into entertainment and media. Your hosts, Joseph and Michelle Whalen, a husband and wife team of pop culture fanatics, are exploring all things from music and movies to television and fandom.
Welcome to Insights in Entertainment. This is episode 69, The Happiest Place in the NBA. I'm your host, Joseph Whalen, and my entertaining and informative co-host, Michelle Whalen.
Hi, everyone.
How you doing today, dear?
I'm good, and you?
I'm doing all right. So we have a well-balanced show for you today. We've got a couple stories in our Disney Detective. We're going to be talking about the NBA being saved in some form by Disney. Then we will talk about Disneyland reopening, or will it be reopening? Then we have news on the Marvel side with WandaVision and Falcon and Winter Soldier news. Then in our Star Wars insights, we'll be talking about what Star Wars nearly looked like with some very nostalgic characters and images.
Yep.
And then we will get an update on The Mandalorian Season 2 from Jon Favreau. And in our entertainment news, one of my favorite entertainers is now in the news, Don Henley, talking to Congress about some changes to the copyright law he'd like to see. Then we'll finish up with our insightful picks of the week like we usually do. And I think we got ourselves a good show this week. Ready to get started?
Sure, let's do it.
All right. Go for Disney Detective.
So the NBA took a major step forward getting back on the court on this past Thursday with the league's Board of Governors approving a 22-team format for restarting the league season next month at Disney, which we've been talking about off and on. They were talking about doing it in Las Vegas. They were talking about Disney. And it seems Disney now has won out. So the teams would arrive in Disney around July 7th, and they would play an 8-game slate of games starting on July 31st at the ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex. All the teams will stay, practice, and play at Disney, and the NBA Finals will probably be stretched out into October because of the time that they haven't been playing since the pandemic, started in March. So they're, still kind of working things out with it. There's health measures they have to look into, and figure it out. But basically, they've determined that it's the 22 teams that were already ahead when the season had stopped. So they're not bringing all of the teams in. There are, obviously, there's more than 22 teams in it. As of right now, they've actually decided that the 2021 season will be tentatively starting December 1st. So if you have your playoffs in October, it doesn't really give you a lot of time off before, your next season starts. So, so obviously the teams that aren't playing in the finals will probably starting up, practice at some point, I'm sure, soon, because again, the season's going to be starting, they're all kind of off, schedule and whatnot. And also they're looking to cut down the number of games before the playoff. Normally they play 82 games, but they're only going to be playing 71 to 75 games during this time. So the 22 teams, I guess there were teams that were already in playoff positions, so they're still, like, everybody's still in their same spot. It's just that, obviously, the couple of teams that aren't in, they're done now for the season. Their season is done. So that's Atlanta, Cleveland, New York, Golden State, Minnesota, Detroit, Chicago, and Charlotte. So they're pretty much done. We're now everybody else. Now they have to start getting ready to head down to Disney World. So
I'm curious what the effect this is going to have on Disney. Obviously, this is a profit-making venture for Disney.
Oh, but sure.
Is this also part of their, hey, let's get people back to the parks because you might be rubbing elbows with NBA celebrities? Is that an angle they're running?
And that's the whole thing. You figure they're probably going to be, you know, during the day, if they're having practices, which I'm sure they will, they'll be at Wide World of Sports. The article didn't say anything about, now normally nobody goes to Wide World of Sports unless there's some activity going on there, or you have a ticket for something, or there's an event, or, you know, a marathon weekend or something like that. So I'm guessing they're probably going to close it off to the public. So unless you're there as part of the NBA, you're not going to be going there. Now, it didn't mention anything about, like, their families, because that was kind of something we had said, was that, oh, well, the families could go, and the families could go to Disney because the parks will be opening, right, you know, around that time. So what will your families be doing, you know? Yeah.
Well, I mean, even if you figure they're going to have downtime at some point.
Right.
If the parks are open, you know, the celebrities, the athletes are going to be going to the parks probably with their families at some point in time.
Right.
So it's one of those things where if you're an NBA fan, this might be a great time to do a Disney vacation.
Sure, if you want to, you know, take the risk. But that's the other thing, too, is, again, we don't know if their family is going. And then that's the other thing is, what are the health restrictions? Is it something where they're not allowed to socialize, you know, or go any place,
right,
you know?
They've not announced anything along those lines.
Right, and they haven't said, like, what resort, because we know not every resort is probably going to be opening, so is their plan to basically
have...
Well,
I would guess these guys aren't staying at the All-Stars.
No, you don't think they're staying in the basketball?
No,
they're probably staying at the Grand Floridian or, you know, someplace. And the thing is, like, Grand Floridian has so many different buildings that, you know, you could house them all...
Sure.
You know, in one or two of them.
Well, and you figure if you just house them at the Magic Kingdom resorts,
right,
you can keep literally the entire NBA.
Oh, yeah, at just
Lake
one.
Buena Vista there.
Yeah, exactly. So it'll be interesting to see how they go forward with the logistics of everything.
Yeah.
And
now, has there been any talks of doing this for any other sports?
No, this is the only one that they've really talked about. You know, I know they've been, you know, hinting about baseball, you know, coming back, but nothing.
Because,
you know,
Disney's Wide World of Sports is more than capable of hosting multiple sports.
Oh, yeah.
I think the only thing they couldn't host there would be, like, ice hockey.
I don't know. I don't know if they have a hockey.
Well, if they do, they probably don't have enough active hockey rinks.
Right, they might only have, like, one. Because I think the Mighty Ducks might have practiced there. So they might only have, like, one or two, if that. But
interesting. So if you're an NBA fan, there is some good
news
on the
horizon. Yeah, so you'll
have... As long as you're not a fan of, you know, one of the teams that have been eliminated.
Yeah, just start liking another one. But you know what? I think, you know, and we've been, you know, joking about this when you're looking at the TV guide and you see ESPN playing, you know, the Super Bowl from 10 years ago and the World Series from 5 years ago.
Sure.
And people are so desperate for sports.
Well, that's like even at work, we keep the TVs on in the lunchroom.
Right.
And ESPN's always on one of the TVs.
Mm-hmm.
And just to listen to what the sports commenters are talking about at this point in time is, it's ridiculous because there's literally nothing to talk about.
Right. So you have a feeling that even if you don't like basketball, you're going to all of a sudden
people are going to become basketball fans just because you need some sport.
Right. If you're that type of person who is having that, oh my God, I need some sort of fix. Yeah. I need to watch some sport. And all of a sudden you're going to become a fan of, you know, Boston now or something just because. So, I don't know. They might get a resurgence in, you know, the amount of fans that they've had before. So,
yeah, that's very possible.
Yeah.
So, tell us about the possibility of Disneyland reopening.
So, according to the OC Register, the state of California has decided theme parks would be able to open again during stage three of the government's four-stage process to reopening the economy. Of course, that depends on their infection rate and, you know, remaining stable. So as for when that'll happen, California governor hinted earlier in May that it could happen sooner than expected. He said, phase three is not a year away. It's not 6 months away. It's not even 3 months away. It may not even be more than a month away. We just want to make sure we have a protocol in place to secure customer safety, employee safety, and allow the businesses to thrive in a way that is sustainable. He had kind of hinted that June 3rd might be a potential date for shifting into stage three. So Disneyland and Disney's California Adventure aren't the only theme parks, obviously, that would be allowed to open under stage three. There's Universal Studios Hollywood, Knott's Berry Farm, Magic Kingdom, and Legoland that are all affected by this. So as of right now, none of those parks have made any sort of announcement as to when they would be opening up. Obviously, the only major domestic theme parks that have some sort of schedule is obviously Universal Orlando, Islands of Adventure, and Volcano Bay, which we had talked about previously. They were starting to open the beginning of this week. They were doing just cast member opening, then they were doing pass holder, and then finally opening up for the public. As just a little side note to all of this, we have a friend who happens to work for Universal in Orlando, and he was affected by this. He was out of work, finally was able to go back to work. He said the first day wasn't so bad. The second day, you had certain guests who were very much adhering to the rules, and then you had a lot of what he said entitled people who just felt like they didn't have to. They weren't wearing their masks correctly. They were wearing them below their nose or below their face and on their chin. They had markings kind of, you know, around, you know, stand here, don't stand here. And just some people were very much by the rules, and then others were just like, whatever. And these were pass holders. So these were the people that you would have thought, if nothing else, they would have been the ones adhering, you know, to everything. So he said he's really praying for humanity at this point, because if this is what things are going to be like when they open up a little bit more, it's going to be hard, you know, basically telling these people, you know, you have to follow the rules if you want to be here.
Hearing that news is exactly why I have no interest of going down at this point in time.
No.
Because you can implement all the rules that you want. You are going to have a certain segment of the population that will think that they're entitled to not do those because they'll have some irrational idea that it's a violation of their privacy, of their personal choice, or whatever it is. And it's really going to come down to what the willingness is of the proprietors to enforce those rules.
Yeah.
If you're going to impose rules and people aren't going to follow them and you're not going to enforce them, then do away with the rules.
Right.
Let everyone know that you're not doing the rules.
Right.
And then people, the smart people like us, will just not, you know, go down there at that point in time.
Yeah. And that's what I'm hoping is that they're going to have a heightened, you know, security base walking around, making sure everybody's following the rule. And if you don't, you get one warning. And if you, you know, don't adhere or you give them problems, then they will exercise their right to escort you off of their property because you're not following their rules.
But the problem that you run into is that there are businesses that are doing that now.
Right.
And they're meeting violent opposition.
Absolutely.
To the point that people are being assaulted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And people are being shot and killed for trying to enforce these rules.
Right. That are there for everybody's safety.
Right. And the problem that you have is if people are going to become deadly.
Right.
Just because you're trying to enforce safety rules, there's no hope of this.
Yeah.
Surviving at this point in time. And I saw a statistic yesterday that globally the number of coronavirus infections have taken an uptick record-wise where you're seeing more than 100,000 people and more than 1,000 people a day infected every day, which had only happened for 5 days during the 3 months prior to that, but it's occurring every day now worldwide. Because everyone's getting exposed to it now because the restrictions are being lifted.
Right.
So I don't know if there's much hope out there for that. I'm hoping that, you know, we get some treatment for it.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like it's going to be here to stay, and we're not going to be able to avoid it. So hopefully we can find a way to survive it.
Yeah.
So on to, I guess, better news after that. Tell us about our Marvel shows, our anticipated Marvel shows.
So it seems that Disney Plus subscribers will get Marvel shows like Loki, WandaVision, and Falcon Winter Soldier on time, but just not as much as they were expecting. So according to Disney Plus Help, the Falcon and Winter Soldier is still scheduled for fall 2020, and WandaVision is still scheduled for a December 2020 release. But it's rumored that we will not be getting their season in their entirety. So reports that came out said Falcon and Winter Soldier and WandaVision will be released, but with a half season. Disney's reasoning is reportedly that it's starved for new content and can't afford to wait until filming and post-production can be completed for the rest of the season, which kind of makes sense because we've seen that with other shows. Walking Dead is a perfect example. They had one, the season finale, couldn't go into post-production. You know, they filmed everything that they could, but they couldn't complete it. But it seems, you know, everybody's looking for something to watch and people are tired of, you know, reruns of things. And, you know, so they want to get stuff out there. And obviously we've seen that, you know, Frozen got released early. Onward got released early. Star Wars got released early. So they've been, you know, releasing things earlier. So obviously they want to kind of keep that momentum going, but they just don't have the full season ready yet. So, you know, usually the seasons are between 6 and 8 episodes, and it looks like when they do get released, we're only going to get half of that. So between, you know, 3 and 4 episodes for each show. So don't binge watch them. Take your time. Watch like one every 2 weeks, you know, kind of make it last. And maybe they'll probably be releasing it the same way that they do with most of their other shows, is they only release one episode a week. So they might even do that where they kind of stretch it out, you know, for the consumer, so that you don't have that binge watching at one time. So, but it's nice to hear that those will still be on track. We're still going to see them before the end of the year. We just won't get to see the whole season just yet.
Well, and you know, the one interesting thing about the scenario itself is it's almost a matter of the styles of the streaming service.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, you have Disney, mm-hmm. who relies very heavily on a back catalog of material, whereas you've got Netflix, who they have this extensive back catalog, but they also, when they release everything at once.
Mm-hmm.
So as a result, they have a much longer pipeline
right.
for their material. So they've got material that's already produced and ready to go. They schedule to release it, they drop it, and then they're ready to drop something else. So they've got a number of shows that are through their production already and ready to go, unlike
right.
Disney, where Disney is almost like a regular television mm-hmm. network. They're producing and releasing and producing and releasing. So they don't get multiple seasons ahead. They don't have all that many original series that they're working on right now compared to a Netflix mm-hmm. or an Amazon Prime. And they're staggering their releases. And Disney does it. Legitimately, they do it so that they can extend your subscriptions out.
Right, right.
Because let's face it, if they dropped all of The Mandalorian Season 1 at once, everyone would have binge-watched it and canceled their subscription within a month.
And there were people that did that, you know, gave it 2 months and,
which
you know.
Is also why Disney gives you the
right.
shortest trial period
right.
as well.
Yeah,
so that
yeah.
you can't binge-watch.
They only give you the
thing.
7 days.
But it turns out, you know, granted, no one could have possibly prepared for
right.
The corona situation like we have right now. But that's exactly why Disney is hard up right now for
mm-hmm.
original material.
Yeah.
You and Maddie in your movie nights have basically ground through a vast library of Disney movies already.
It's amazing how many more there still are that we haven't, you know, seen. And one of the things is because they made so many, I wouldn't say bad sequels, but they made some, you know, interesting direct-to-video sequels. Right. Not like, you know, a Toy Story 2 or a Frozen 2. You know, Hunchback of Notre Dame 2 was not something, you know, that played in the theater. But it's kind of interesting to see that. And also, we're watching movies that, you know, aren't part of that, you know, normal catalog, you know, that they were movies that were made, you know, so it's interesting to see, you know, how Disney movies, you know, started and kind of had a decline, and they came back up, and, you know, so it's interesting from that perspective, you know, so fortunately we still have plenty to go through, but again, there's still not as much new content out there like, you know, some of the other services have.
Right,
so.
Right. But, you know, to see that philosophy, that production and release philosophy that Disney subscribed to is now, is what's hurting it right
mm-hmm.
now, just like
yeah.
it's hurting your regular network television
mm-hmm.
as well.
Yeah.
They have the same problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, if anything, this situation itself is really going to lend itself to seeing streaming services take off because they're going to be filling this gap
mm-hmm.
that a lot of network television can't fill.
Yeah, yeah.
So, that was all we had for our Disney Detective.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk about our Star Wars insights. For over 7 years, the Second Sith Empire has been the premier community guild in the online game Star Wars: The Old Republic. With hundreds of friendly and helpful active members, a weekly schedule of nightly events, annual guild meet and greets, and an active community both on the web and on Discord. The Second Sith Empire is more than your typical gaming group. We're family. Join us on the Starforge server for nightly events such as operations, flashpoints, world boss hunts, Star Wars trivia, guild lottery, and much more. Visit us on the web today at www.thesecondsithempire.com. Go for Star Wars Insights. That's the wrong button. That's the Star Trek Insights. How about... There we go.
That was like...
sacrilege, I know.
Blasphemy.
Sorry.
I can't do this podcast anymore. I don't know who you are.
Wrong key on the soundboard. Production faux pas. That's like, you know, live production. Wow. You gotta love it, right?
Wow, man. I just don't even know where to begin.
Anyway, Star Wars Insights.
So this was a funny little story that came up, and I figured we'd throw it in. So Star Wars is obviously packed with legendary actors, you know, and that perfect cast. But what's funny is it wasn't nearly as perfect as it came to be. So before Star Wars was shot, it was so low on 20th Century Fox's agenda that they actually gave George Lucas the merchandising and sequel rights in lieu of a salary, thinking that they'd save themselves $350,000. Whoops! They lost out on $1.6 billion. That's kind of funny when you think about it. But obviously, with that, now we're finding out that there were other stars that were considered for some of these main roles. So Han Solo, how would you feel if Al Pacino had played the role? You know, he said it was mine for the taking, but I just didn't understand the script. Obviously, he went on to do The Godfather and, you know, and famous line of, I'm going to make him an offer I can't refuse. You know, he could have said, hey, get in there, you big furry oaf. I don't care what you smell, you know. So, it definitely would have been a much different Star Wars with Al Pacino as Han Solo. Another actor up for Han Solo was James Caan. So he obviously starred with Pacino in The Godfather, and he actually was quoted as saying, you know, they didn't want an actor, and that's why they got Harrison Ford. Little did they know, Harrison Ford would obviously go on to be very successful in his movie career.
Because Harrison Ford at the time
right.
was a carpenter.
Right.
And George had basically called him in just to read lines with the people that were rehearsing.
Right, right. So, you know, plenty of other actors obviously auditioned for the role. Now, Sylvester Stallone claims that Lucas never even looked at him during his tryouts, but Kurt Russell, Christopher Walken, Nick Nolte, and even Freddy Krueger himself, Robert Englund, had a chance at the role. Englund, who was actually too young for the role, did suggest Mark Hamill. He said, yeah, there's this kid that's sleeping on my sofa after, you know, a six-pack of beer. And he actually tried out for Luke Skywalker, and obviously we know how that turned out. So that was the people for Han Solo. Princess Leia, they were actually looking at Jodie Foster. She said that she was actually doing two back-to-back films at the time, which were Taxi Driver and Bugsy Malone. And she said, it would have been fun, but my career would have definitely gone in a different direction, and I'm happy with the one that I got, so I really don't regret it. But she said, honestly, I was 14 or 15 at the time, and, you know, it would have been kind of weird, you know, convincing those characters, you know, that I was a little older, and it would have been a different concept, you know, for the film. Then, of course, having the love interest of Harrison Ford, there's a 20-year difference between them. So that would have definitely taken a different angle, you know, if they had gone with her. Now, this was interesting. For Grand Moff Tarkin, Christopher Lee was actually asked to do the role. But he said that he wasn't interested in, you know, being part of it. But he actually suggested his friend and on-screen nemesis, Peter Cushing, for the role. So that's how, you know, Peter Cushing got into the role.
That was the old Hammer Films tie-in with Cushing, Christopher Lee, David Prowse.
Yeah, yeah. So, and obviously, we know that Christopher Lee did eventually become part of the Star Wars family and, you know, Count Dooku. Luke Skywalker, one of our favorite 80s television series, The Greatest American Hero, William Catt was actually, pegged to do this. And there's actually some footage of him and Kurt Russell having an audition for this role. He was that boy next door look, you know, that they wanted to have, but obviously it ended up going to Mark Hamill because he had more of what George Lucas was looking for. So I'm gonna totally kill this name, but for Obi-Wan Kenobi, it was actually a Japanese actor, Toshiro Mifune. And this is kind of why the name has that sound to it. So it was basically like a fanboy wish list. So George Lucas was a huge fan of, you know, Japanese martial art movies. And one of the big stars at the time was Toshiro, and he had actually asked him, you know, to play this part. Obviously, he turned it down. His daughter had claimed that her father, who Lucas actually offered the role of Darth Vader, was worried that Lucas would make the samurai ethos look cheap. So they obviously changed plans, but you could almost see how different the movie would have been if they had, you know, gone with, you know, those actors, you know, and would it have gone on, you know, for all the sequels, you know, if, you know, you had a different cast, you know, in place. So I thought that was a kind of a cool little story that popped
up. I can't help but think of Star Wars with Pacino as Han Solo. Pacino would have had to have played the gangster, not, you know.
Right. He definitely
would have been Jabba the Hutt, really.
I could totally see that. Yeah. Yeah, that definitely would have been, you know, different. Plus he's, you know, he's not very tall either, so, you know.
And he's not a pilot.
And he's not How do you know that? Are you sure?
Yes, he's not. But I do know that Han Solo, Harrison Ford, is a pilot.
Yes, he definitely
is
a pilot.
Not a very good one, because he keeps getting in trouble with the FAA, but he is a pilot.
It's been a while.
No, it's been recent. He's actually,
really?
The FAA is investigating another incident.
Oh, God. Poor Harrison.
Yeah, well, you know, got to stay on the right track, I guess.
Yeah.
So, anyway, interesting. Very interesting to see how Star Wars could have turned out.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's talk about The Mandalorian.
So, The Mandalorian, yay, remains on track to debut its second season in October. Jon Favreau had said, "We were lucky enough to have finished photography before the lockdown. Thanks to how technology forward Lucas and ILM are, we have been able to do all of our visual effects and editing and post-production remotely through systems that have been set up by both companies for us." So, yay! He had noted that, you know, due to the rigors of the television schedule, season two actually feels more of a continuation of season one than a brand new thing. He said, "As we explore partnering with new filmmakers and having new characters and going deeper with the character we already have, it's really been fun and fulfilling, and I hope people are having as much fun seeing it as we have making it." So that's obviously good news that, you know, as of right now, we're going to get the full season and it's going to come out in October, a year after. No, a little. When did the first season come out? Was that October? Or was it?
Somewhere around there. October,
yeah, it was the end. So Disney Plus obviously doesn't release viewership data, but the first season of The Mandalorian made a big splash with pop culture. Baby Yoda obviously became the surprise breakout star, and Disney's Bob Iger had noted that the show will go on beyond season two and could even spin off characters into their own series.
Dun, dun, dun.
So, yay! Full season, right on track.
Well, and honestly, this doesn't come as much of a surprise because the level of technology that they're using on the show.
Oh my God! Yeah.
Now, like it doesn't surprise me that they're capable of doing their post production stuff remotely. We see a lot of TV shows now that are live TV shows that are recording remotely. They're mm-hmm. doing their post-production remotely, and you're getting pretty quality, high-quality productions mm-hmm. out of these. And if all the shooting had been done already, which it sounds like it had been for season two,
mm-hmm.
post-production could be done in somebody's basement with the right hardware.
Yeah.
So it's good to see that they were set up for it. It's not mm-hmm. surprising, but it is very reassuring to know that we've got some light at the end of the tunnel, that come October, we're getting our season two.
Yay, Baby Yoda.
So that's great news. Now maybe Disney will get on the ball and get the Baby Yoda merchandising out the door.
Well, they're doing, it's coming out slowly
but surely.
It's coming.
You know, 8 months later. But you
better late than never.
I guess. Okay, I guess. Anyway, that's all we had for our Star Wars Insights. Mm-hmm. We'll be back in a moment with our entertainment news of the week.
Insights into Teens, a podcast series exploring the issues and challenges of today's youth. Talking to real teens about real teen problems. Explore issues from braces to puberty, social anxiety to financial responsibility. Each week, we talk about the topics concerning today's youth. We look at how the issues affect teens, how to cope with these issues, and how parents, friends, and loved ones can help teens handle these challenges. Check out our video episodes on youtube.com/insightsintothings. Catch our audio versions on podcast.insightsintoteens.com or on the web at insightsintothings.com.
Anyway, we're back. We were just bantering about getting some guests on the show.
Yeah, he's like, get some guests. So he was like, get Harrison Ford. Harrison Ford, sure.
I'll totally do the show. Come on. He and I are old friends.
Totally call him up.
Anyway, I'm totally unprepared for this.
You are.
Now.
See, you did the whole Star Trek thing instead of Star Wars. You're just
totally off today.
Done.
Totally off. Anyway, so in the news, we have Don Henley talking to Congress about copyright law. So tell us about
right.
that.
Right. So Don Henley, who was one of the songwriters for the Eagles, is urging Congress.
He did more than just write songs for the Eagles, for the record. He was a songwriter. He was a primary vocalist, and he did drums, and he plays guitar.
Would you like to do the story?
No. Please, go ahead. I'm just making sure the man gets proper credit. That's all. That's really what this whole story is about, isn't it?
No, it's not. It has nothing to do with any of that, actually.
It's about giving credit.
Oh, okay. So he is urging Congress to protect artists against online pirating, wading into the copyright fight that's actually pitted between Hollywood and the recording industry against big tech platforms like Google's YouTube. So the blockbuster hit maker of the 70s, is that a better?
That's acceptable.
actually testified online from his home before the Senate Judiciary Committee, weighing possible changes to a 1998 copyright law. The law allows holders of copyrighted material to formally ask parties that they believe have taken their content without permission to remove it. The parties can dispute the claim. If they comply promptly with the request, there are no legal consequences. Otherwise, they're subject to criminal penalties. So the so-called notice and takedown system under the copyright law is used by the movie and recording industries, entertainment software companies, and book authors to pursue tech platforms, universities, and other facilitators of file sharing. Henley called the copyright law a relic of the MySpace era in a TikTok world. That made me laugh.
Well, you know, he's good at lyrics.
And that he actually knew what TikTok was. That's impressive. So, with hundreds of millions of takedown notices sent for every link taken down, he said a dozen more pop up in its place. The system still allows big tech to rake in revenue after repeated, you know, the copyright infringements. So the copyright battle has been spotlighted in Congress at a time when U.S. tech giants are in an escalating feud with the president and Republican lawmakers who are accusing platforms such as Twitter, Facebook, and Google of suppressing conservative viewpoints. So all this is kind of, you know, linked together. So, you know, in a debate between online pirating, the committee has been, you know, making its learnings known. You know, they've said that, you know, piracy has become easier and faster and much, much more common. The current system is failing, and it's failing badly. So, you know, copyright holders maintain that some network operators have manipulated internet provider addresses in a way to make other networks appear responsible for their file sharing. Entertainment industries have been pushing tech formats, platforms to do more for themselves to police the content that violates the copyright. And then, of course, on the other side, the users of the content have accused copyright holders of alleging infringements where it doesn't exist. Internet companies say that they have worked actively with the creative industries to block access to illegal content and protect the copyrights.
So this is one that I have to get up on my soapbox about.
I knew you would.
First off, as an artist, he has every right to protect his intellectual property. Mm-hmm. I don't want to deny that.
Right.
A couple of problems that I have here is right now the system that they have with automated algorithms that determine if you're using content
mm-hmm.
doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We've been victims of that.
Yep.
Number of times. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there have been incidents where we've shown clips from movie trailers
mm-hmm.
and we've gotten orders to take down, where it's kind of idiotic that you're having me take down free advertising for you, but okay, we'll take that. We've had incidents where I've used this show, as a matter of fact, our outro music for this show, our original outro music, came from a royalty-free site that I paid a membership for that site to use their material.
Mm-hmm.
And got notifications for takedowns, even though the material that I had every legal right to use.
Right.
So I could either take it down or I could fight them in court. And being a nonprofit, no profit, you know, in the red, you know, podcast that we are here with
right.
no income coming in for the podcast, I couldn't afford to do that.
Right.
So I had to take it down, even though I had every legal right to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And I paid for that legal right.
Right.
We had an incident where we had a guest of the show who was a performer.
Mm-hmm.
We went to a live performance where he was using music that was based on original work from the Eagles, by the way,
mm-hmm.
that he had rearranged himself and was using a legal version of it for backing music for his live show,
mm-hmm.
which we recorded and included on the podcast, which was caught by the automated algorithms and forced to take down.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go and record an Eagles concert and put it up there. I recorded this independent artist mm-hmm. who was covering the song legally in a public venue,
right.
and I had to take it down. So the system itself doesn't work. I'll totally agree with Don Henley. It's not working in his favor right now, though, and that's where the problem comes.
Mm-hmm.
Where the system itself errs on the side of the artist and the copyright holder right now. And you have almost no recourse if you're going to use it online. The second problem that I have is Don Henley is appealing to Congress to rule on a law that is out of date because of technology.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that Congress is notorious for is being completely divorced from any type of technological understanding whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
They try to apply the most draconian, simplistic viewpoints to anything that has anything to do with technology. And anytime Congress or the U.S. government are invited to rule on anything with technology, they invariably always rule the opposite way that they should be ruling. And it's because they don't understand the technology. They don't understand the implications that it has. They don't understand the forethought that goes into this. You look at things like the Patriot Act or the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. These are all things that have hindered technological advancement. They have stolen away rights of citizens because of some high, you know, falutin idea of what the government power should be. And ultimately, every time the government is invited to rule on laws that are affected by technology, they do it wrong. So as a citizen, as a technologist, as a lover of music and talent like Don Henley, I totally support his desire to keep his control of his music and his content, but he's doing it the exact wrong way that he should. You're inviting Congress to get involved in something they don't understand,
right,
that they aren't going to make the right decisions on, and ultimately, in the end, I'm going to lose as a consumer, he's going to lose as a copyright holder, and nobody's going to win. The federal government is just going to take on more and more control, and we're basically all screwed if they get involved. You see what happens when you allow industry insiders to dictate copyright policy, and I'll give Disney as an example of that. You know, Disney lobbied to move the copyright laws for public domain material several times in the history of copyright law. So now your copyright law stretches all the way back to like the 1930s at this point in time, because Disney wanted to protect Mickey Mouse and they didn't want Mickey Mouse to become public domain. So anytime that an industry giant like that is allowed to basically buy legislation, I have no idea. I'm not going to allege that that's what Don Henley's doing, but anytime that an industry giant, a studio or a recording industry tries to influence Congress, they've got far more chance to buy their own legislation than you or I do as citizens. Mm-hmm. And it's dangerous. And we're far better off by not having the government get involved in things they don't understand. So I'm concerned the direction that this is going to go. It doesn't make me like Don Henley or the Eagles any less, though, just for the record.
Okay.
That's my soapbox.
Thank you.
Anyway, that was all we had for entertainment news this
week.
We'll take a quick break and we'll come back with our insightful picks of the week.
Okay.
Go for your insightful pick.
So my insightful pick is a 2020 documentary called A Secret Love. When we first see Terry Donahue on screen in the documentary A Secret Love, she is wearing a green t-shirt with the words "There's no crying in baseball." And movie fans that cherish that line from A League of Their Own in the 1992 film based on the true story of the first woman's professional baseball league founded in World War II. And there's a good reason for that, because she was one of the real-life athletes who played in the All-American Girl Professional Baseball League. So what this documentary is about these two women who met and fell in love and for decades never told anybody that they were actually in a relationship. The two women lived together for nearly 60 years, and it wasn't until 2009 that they actually told their family that they were actually in a partnership. They had been out to gay friends for decades, but obviously it wasn't until much later that they told their family. The one woman says that she felt like she was kind of living a lie and that, you know, she was afraid to tell her nieces and nephews because she was afraid that they weren't going to love her anymore. So the documentary weaves back and forth between the present day and earlier moments in Pat and Terry's life, talking about how, you know, living in Canada for a little while and then living in Chicago and, you know, moving around and how, you know, they had to kind of live their life, you know, in secret for so long, you know, and very interesting. So they have old movies of them and videos and photographs of the two of them. And, you know, the kids, you know, the nieces and nephews were always like, we just thought you guys were good friends. And they actually did have they did legally get married a couple years back. They ended up moving into a nursing home. Unfortunately, the one woman, Pat, did pass away last year. But they were able to finally have their truth, you know, out. So it's a very loving story of these two women and to see, you know, they talk about how the one woman, her parents, they think they kind of knew, but it was like the 1930s, 1940s, and it was, again, something you didn't talk about, but they didn't see anything wrong with them always hanging out, and there was never that pressure of, why aren't you getting married? Why aren't you having kids? Or, you know, they just kind of let them be. And it was nice to just see a nice love story between these two women.
Nice. Good pick.
Thank you.
So my pick this week is a documentary, back on the documentary kick. This is actually kind of a classic, not too classic, but not new either. This is a show called The Real Story on the Smithsonian Channel. It was produced from 2007 through 2013 with some off years in between. They've thrilled us, horrified us, and devastated us. They've raised questions about our past and given us hope for a brighter future. They are Hollywood's biggest hits, all works of fiction, but all inspired by real events more dramatic than anything a screenwriter could come up with. The Real Story goes behind the scenes of Hollywood's biggest movies and uncovers the actual characters and true stories that inspired them. The show explores the fictional stories and draws a direct parallel to the real stories that inspired them, explore the facts versus fiction of Platoon, Braveheart, Master and Commander, Apollo 13, Saving Private Ryan, and more. The Saving Private Ryan episode, for instance, shows how the fictional story of John Patrick Ryan was drawn directly from the story of the Nyland brothers, almost as a direct comparison. So the brothers, you know, the story of Private Ryan is, you know, he's a one of four sons in a family that go off to fight in World War II. His three brothers get killed in various ways, and Tom Hanks and his troop of commandos are sent inland to find Private Ryan, who was airdropped in as part of the D-Day invasion. And their job's to basically secure him and bring him back. And the story itself has a direct parallel to the Nyland brothers. The whole thing was based on the sole survivor rule that was put in place after the Sullivan brothers, all four of them, five of them, died on a Navy ship when it was torpedoed in the South Pacific. So the government put in this sole survivor. So if you're the last survivor of the entire family, you basically get taken out of the war and sent home.
Okay.
So this same thing happened to the Nyland brothers, and the way that the Nyland brothers met their fate was portrayed in the movie itself. One was shot down, one was killed at D-Day, and so forth. So the stories itself played out. But what's interesting about the real story is they go in and they show you the behind-the-scenes stuff. They'll show you Like, for instance, the factual stories versus what's depicted in the movie itself. They'll even go so far as to do a forensic analysis to see if the way things are portrayed in the show, in the movies, actually could happen.
Okay.
And again, I go back to the Saving Private Ryan episode. There's a scene where they're landing on the beaches of Normandy, and they're jumping over the sides of the Higgins boats to avoid getting shot coming down the ramps. And there are scenes where they're in the water, underwater, being shot by incoming machine gun fire. And the show itself actually goes out and does a forensic study of this and tries to recreate that by firing rounds into a tub of water to see what the effects are. And, you know, they prove that that aspect of it was really a work of fiction in Hollywood because bullets don't behave the same in real life as they do in the movie there. So it's a very interesting approach to looking at the movies. They look at historic movies, they look at how they're portrayed, and they look at how realistic they are. Braveheart's another great example.
Okay.
One of the most dramatic scenes in Braveheart is a Battle of Stirling Bridge, where the Scottish forces under the command of William Wallace defeat the British at Stirling Bridge because of the strategy of boxing them in as they cross the bridge and stuff like that. And they examine the fact that in the movie, there's no bridge.
So
they completely changed how the movie portrayed a battle of Stirling Bridge when by not even having a bridge there. But they go in and they talk about it because Stirling Bridge doesn't exist and it moved and this and that. And the landscape where they did the shooting wasn't correct for it. So it's very interesting to go in and number one, see how the movies were shot, which is always fun. But to see how compromises had to be made in order to tell the story. Because sometimes the stories themselves, the real stories, no pun intended, don't always flow well enough for the movie screen. So sometimes your directors have to take some creative shortcuts in order to keep the story itself flowing. So it's a very interesting show. There's, I think, 5 seasons in total across that time. And they tackle all kinds of different movies there. So the real story on the Smithsonian Channel.
Very cool.
So I think that was all we had this week. Mm-hmm. You didn't have any afterthoughts or anything, did you?
Nope. Nothing today.
I think that was all we had this week. We invite you to subscribe to us. You can subscribe to our audio podcasts under Insights in Entertainment or our video podcasts under Insights into Things. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and all major podcast providers. Or you can reach out and contact us directly. We do stream live 6 days a week on Twitch at twitch.tv/insightsintothings.
You can get us on, I'm sorry, you can send us comments, not you can get us on. Well, you can email us or whatever at comments@insightsintothings.com.
We are in the Twitterverse at insights_things.
On YouTube, you can catch the video versions of all of the podcasts at youtube.com/insightsintothings.
You can get all of our episodes as well as show notes and transcriptions at insightsintothings.com on the web.
For just the audio version of our podcast, you can go to podcast.insightsintoentertainment.com.
Or you can go to the Evil Empire Facebook and get us at facebook.com/insightsintothingspodcast. And I think that's it.
That is it.
We are done. Another one in the books.
Have a good week, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.